Welcome back to Uprising. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. A section of the USA Patriot Act expires on Sunday, and lawmakers still haven't decided what, if anything, to do about it. Section 215, according to The Hill, quote, has been used by law enforcement almost 200 times per year to collect bank and business records from suspected terrorists and spies. But privacy advocates have long denounced the invasive nature of the law into the lives of innocent and ordinary Americans. The USA Freedom Act was intended to address some of the concerns, but activists celebrated when the Senate failed to pass it on a procedural vote. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has scheduled a rare Sunday vote on the measure to try to pass it once more, and the House already passed the bill. The Senate will also consider a bill introduced by Senator Dianne Feinstein, who has been a strong proponent of the government's right to spy on Americans. Feinstein's bill criminalizes whistleblowers and is being likened to the Espionage Act. Meanwhile, the Obama administration, panicking at the idea that it might lose some legal justification for mass surveillance, accused lawmakers of playing, quote, national security Russian roulette with the Patriot Act. My guest is Marcy Wheeler. She is a journalist specializing in national security issues, the war on terror, and civil liberties. She has a column on exposefacts.org called Right to Know. Welcome to the show, Marcy.
Thanks for having me.
So what exactly has Section 215 enabled the government to do, and why is that section sunsetting now, but not the entire Patriot Act?
So when it was instituted, it was a new thing, and Congress was worried it could be used to get things like library records, which it can, with some special reporting requirements. And so they included a sunset on it just so that Congress could review it from time to time to make sure it hadn't been abused. There are actually three things that are expiring on Monday, and that's just one of them. But people know it best as the authorization for the phone dragnet, for the government's effort to collect every single American's phone records, the records of who they call, when, how long they're on the phone, what handset they use when they do it. And that's been in place since 2006. But the Hill piece that you quoted actually is misleading, because the most common use of it now, in addition to this phone dragnet, is to collect fairly bulky internet collections. So it might be that it is collecting the records of anybody coming into or out of a frequent cyber attack target, including innocent people. It might be collecting the records of a particular internet service provider. So it's collecting everybody's phone records, or at least everybody's landline and anything that crosses AT&T's backbone. But it's also being used for, I mean, the most of what it's used for is actually very bulky collection. And so it picks up the records of completely innocent people and leaves them in NSA or more often FBI's databases for up to 30 years.
So what you're saying is that even though this section specifically is authorizes phone data collection, it is actually being used to look at internet information as well by searching the phone records of ISPs?
No, of going to the ISP and saying, give us your logs of everybody who's been visiting this website or... and that's what we believe they're doing, is they're getting data flow, log records. So it is fairly bulky and significant records of the internet activities at particular corners of the internet, if that makes sense.
So are the Obama administration's words on national security Russian roulette a little over the top?
The Russian roulette. look, the phone dragnet has proved not very useful at all. It's never found a terrorist. The only thing that it purportedly has been a part of is finding a guy who sent $8,500 to al-Shabaab, and not even because he supported terrorists. He was trying to fight back against the Kenyan invasion of Somalia. So that's all it's been good for since 2006.
Wow.
I do suspect that this internet collection is much more valuable to the government, but that stuff is not going to expire right on Sunday. That stuff, it'll have different expiration dates. We won't know when those are, but that's going to continue for a while.
And the ACLU's Jameel Jafar said that the claim that the expiration of Section 215 would deprive the government of necessary investigative tools or compromise national security is entirely without support. So I think you likely agree with him on that.
I mostly agree. I mean, I think that if the government would let themselves be honest rather than this ridiculous veil of secrecy, they might actually be able to point to some uses of that internet function, which they've only done since 2009. But hey, they won't let themselves be honest. So I'm with Jamil. Until they can give us a concrete explanation of what the use of it is, I'm just going to assume that it's not all that useful.
Now, the Justice Department released a report last week on the effectiveness of Section 215, and analysts say that it actually contradicts the Attorney General's claims about the Patriot Act. Is that true?
That report, the use of Section 215 that report investigates only goes through 2009, so it doesn't include this internet stuff.
Right.
So what we can conclude is that all of the other uses, so the phone dragnet, there's also, by the way, and this is important, it did and may still authorize Section 215, that is, the collection of all of the international money transfer records for Western Union. So if, you know, if people have family overseas and they're sending money via Western Union, they're being sucked up, or they at least were being sucked up in this dragnet, which is something CIA runs under the program. And again, that's another example of lots of innocent people who will be affected by these bulkier programs. And and we don't know whether that money transfer, that Western Union dragnet, is still in existence, but we don't know, you know, it's that showed up in the IG report, and that apparently wasn't all that useful either. So,
Well, a newly confirmed Attorney General Loretta Lynch said that if Section 215 expires, quote, we lose important tools. I think that we lose the ability to intercept these communications, which have proven very important in cases that we have built in the past. Do we know what she's talking about, or is it just that she's trying to get us to take her word for it because they're not necessarily giving us all the data?
Right, and she was talking about that Section 215 and the two other expiring provisions.
Mm-hmm.
And her use of the word intercept is really funny because under Section 215, they're not allowed to intercept any communications. So it's unclear what she meant by that. But just as an example, one of the other expiring provisions is called the roving wiretap provision. And that allows them, you know, say they're going to wiretap me. Every time I get a new phone, they can move their wiretap to that new phone based on the original order against me. But we also know that that provision is one that the FISA court has secretly redefined back in 2007, such that they said, okay, you can agree to wiretap Al-Qaeda, which is this kind of amorphous group that might include 70 people and might include 6,000. And anytime you come up with a number that you want to wiretap under the name of wiretapping Al-Qaeda, we'll approve it. And so that one too, and that may be what Attorney General Lynch meant when she said intercept. But everyone keeps saying, well, that's a non-controversial authority. And in my mind, once the FISA court has redefined these words in secret, and we know they have with this one, then it's controversial. Then I find it controversial, and we shouldn't just assume that they haven't reinvented it further to conduct more wiretapping in the United States under some crazy provision.
So let's talk about the fact that there have been some efforts to try to address the problems with Section 215, and of course with surveillance in general. There is still the USA Freedom Act that the House passed, that I believe was initially supported in its earlier forms by privacy advocates. It did not survive a procedural vote in the Senate, and it's going to be raised again on Sunday. What does the USA Freedom Act do, and is it just that it's so watered down now that people aren't supporting it, privacy advocates aren't supporting it?
A lot of privacy advocates are. There's a split in the privacy community, and I think it's generally a respectful split, that people who are supporting it think it's a good first step, and people I'm on this side who aren't supporting it think that it gives away too much in an effort to get the phone records out of the hands of the government. And the good sides of it is it will shut down this phone dragnet. It won't let the government collect communications records in bulk. And by bulk, we mean all. So in other words, the government will no longer be able to go to Verizon and say, we want to collect all records that you have on all Americans. It will be able to go to Verizon and say, we want to collect all records that show this kind of behavior, or all records that we think might have some tie to Al-Qaeda. And that's one of the problems with it, is it does significantly limit the kind of communications that you can collect. It would not, for example, do anything to end that Western Union dragnet I told you about. So if that's still in place, that'll go on just like it currently is, because that kind of limiting language is tied more specifically to communications records than it is to other tangible things.
So let's talk about Senator Dianne Feinstein's offering in this debate. She proposes a way to salvage Section 215, but it, I understand, goes even further than just preserving phone surveillance powers. It actually criminalizes whistleblowers.
Right. So both Richard Burr, who is the chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, and Dianne Feinstein, who is the ranking member, introduced bills in the last week. And Richard Burr's was sort of like the fantasy of the intelligence community. It would authorize the existing phone dragnet. It would expand it to internet records, which they've had problems getting in bulk since 2009, 2011. It would allow them to take that other internet collection I told you about and move it back to orders that don't have any kind of court review. And both of these bills, so then in response, Feinstein introduced a bill that was sort of like USA Freedom Act, but gutted some things and as you said, included this provision, which was also in Burr's bill, which basically makes it a 10-year felony to leak not just national defense information, which is what the Espionage Act prohibits, but classified information.
Wow.
So anything that has to do with the collection of these phone records going forward carries with it its very own special 10-year prison term. And you gotta wonder, I mean, why would a bill have its very own Espionage Act?
Right. And in fact, aren't they already using the Espionage Act, or I should say misusing it to persecute Edward Snowden, for example? Is this just a way of really, you know, if anyone questions the use of the Espionage Act, putting it in its own bill?
Well, the standard is lower, for one. I mean, it just has to be classified. So basically anything that has to do with this program, wow, they're going to say it's classified. We don't want a peep of this getting to journalists ever again. And that's actually remarkable. Richard Burr said, and this is the shtick that they're saying, they're like, excuse me, they said, well, we need to protect the providers. Every other civilized country, when they impose data retention requirements, makes it clear that every provider is subject to it. Rather than doing that, they say we want to protect providers, which, by the way, would prevent the providers from leaking details about what they're being asked to do. And one of the reasons I'm particularly concerned about this, like special Espionage Act just for the phone dragnet, for the phone records provision, is it's not entirely clear what the providers are going to be asked to do. So in other words, they're going to be asked to get records of people who are connected. And the House report on USA Freedom Act imposed some limits about what kind of connections they could make. But if those limits aren't in place, then providers could be asked to do kind of pattern analysis, which is something we know the NSA does overseas. And it's something that we know until 2009 they were doing on this phone record data. And so in cases like that, you basically would have Verizon and Apple become the paid deputies of the intelligence community. And you can see why that they would impose this Espionage Act to prevent us from learning that.
So pattern analysis, meaning basically running algorithms on data to try to catch suspicious patterns of people's phone calls?
Right. So The Intercept had an article on the way the NSA tracks co-travelers. So people carrying phones who are walking in the same place, or certain kinds of travel patterns. That has nothing to do with phone calls. It has everything to do with geolocation, right?
Right.
Which our smartphones collect on us all the time by necessity. and they found, the NSA determined that based on these pattern analyses, a particular Al Jazeera journalist was a courier for Al-Qaeda. But that's the kind of thing NSA does with phone metadata overseas they can't do it with the phone records they collect in the United States, partly because they can't get the NSA cannot receive those location records in bulk from the telecoms, but the telecoms still have access to them. And so, you know, the under USA Freedom Act and Feinstein's bill, it is still true that the NSA could not receive location in bulk. The House bill prohibits providers from being asked to do analysis on location data. But if, you know, depending on what happens, that may go onto the cutting room floor. Right. Just as an example, AT&T has a program called Hemisphere, and they do geolocation analysis on phone records under the drug war. So, there is precedent for a particular telecom to do this kind of analysis in records it holds but doesn't turn over to the government. And that's one of the things we should right now, USA Freedom Act does not permit that. I want to be clear. But we should be vigilant against letting that happen as these bills kind of wander through both houses.
So, Marcy, what is expected to happen on Sunday? This is a very sort of last minute, you know, last ditch effort to salvage this section of the USA Patriot Act. And some reports are emerging now that Senator Rand Paul, a libertarian Republican, might try to thwart any efforts to prolong a Section 215 or preserve any of its powers. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, the only way the phone dragnet can continue and move towards this transition to where the providers will hold the records and do the analysis for the government, and that would happen in 6 months. The only way that can happen is if three additional senators support the USA Freedom Act, because that's already been passed by the House, and if Paul and everybody else, I mean, it could be a right-wing senator, Rand Paul is right-wing, but of a different type. It could be an authoritarian senator like Tom Cotton who could object to moving forward without any further debate. But any senator on Sunday night, even if three additional senators vote to move forward to vote for USA Freedom Act, can delay the vote of it up to 30 hours, but they can't prevent the vote. And so you could see, for example, Paul being guaranteed votes on surveillance-related bills in the next week, and him agreeing to unanimous consent, and then it being voted through, and President Obama signing USA Freedom Act at midnight on Sunday. Or you could see Paul object, and you could see them vote through the USA Freedom Act on Tuesday, and it go back to the House to resuscitate the dragnet. And that might be the most likely thing. And those 2 days of dragnet lapse would not be that big of a deal. But those are the two most likely things to happen. But I don't think anyone really knows.
What are the odds that Feinstein's bill could be the one picked up? Or is there just not enough support, you think, politically?
Well, the problem is she'd have to get it through the House. And,
right.
And a lot of people, I mean, it's not just that people in the House came up with what they view as a reasonable compromise. And I all of the hawks, for the most part, in the House voted for it. I think that it should be regarded as something that has a lot for the intelligence community, and that, you know, a fair number of progressives supported. So I think you can call it a compromise, for better and worse. I think that, you know, they may object to being asked to go back and do their hard work again just because the Senate basically turned in its homework. One of the underlying themes that really should be brought out about this is Mitch McConnell. He's like, oh, we got to keep the country safe. If the dragnet lapses, it is Mitch McConnell's fault first and foremost, because he's the one who, partly to gain tactical advantage, delayed these votes until the very last minute. And so, brand new majority leader, we've got to keep the country safe. If the dragnet lapses, the person far most responsible for that is Mitch McConnell.
And is there a chance that Section 215 would just expire and be laid to rest? The New York Times today put out an op-ed essentially calling for Section 215 to simply expire.
Well, I think after Section 215 expires, there'll be a debate about what limits should be imposed on it. I think that internet stuff I talked to you about before, I think most people in government, I think it's probably bulkier than we should support. I think we should ensure that the FBI gets rid of the records it collects after it determines there's no tie to spying or terrorism. So, I think you could improve that. But I think that function will be preserved in some way or another. Another way they've used this in the past, for example, is they sometimes get explosive precursors, which also happen to be beauty supplies. I kid you not, they used it in 2009 to get acetone, large purchases, but wow, not that large. Large purchases of acetone and hydrogen peroxide in Aurora, Colorado, and then apparently reference those purchases to see if anybody was 2 degrees from Najibulizazi. And so that's the kind of thing that would be preserved as well. That they want. I bet they've used it to get pressure cookers as well in the aftermath of the marathon bombing. So that kind of function will be preserved, although I would like to see a debate about the retention of those records of people that are completely innocent, because otherwise, you'll have pressure cooker owners being in an FBI database potentially implicated just because their neighbor has ties to somebody dubious overseas for 30 years. And that's, I think, another real problem.
So, Marcy, at this point, what role can ordinary Americans play in impacting and influencing this debate and this sort of high-speed dealing around these various laws and letting Section 215 expire, renewing it, et cetera? Can people, are there efforts to encourage folks to contact their representatives, or are there protests planned for the Capitol on Sunday?
I would definitely, if you either want these authorities to expire with the hope that people can get more leverage to negotiate better protections for Americans' privacies, or if you think USA Freedom Act is a good bill that should be the kind of last line in the sand, I would definitely encourage you to call your senator and your representative, because anything except USA Freedom Act would have to go back through the House. And to the extent that people in the House are saying, we're not going to water down this bill anymore, that means that USA Freedom Act is the very worst that can happen. And that does have some advantage, that does have some improvement, some weak transparency, some first steps in making the FISA court more accountable. So, then people should call their representatives. And there are, last week when people were at home, there were actually protests in front of senators' offices to let this stuff sunset. So,
and we didn't get a chance to talk about the Obama administration, except for the hysterical sounding language regarding national security, Russian roulette. But is Obama, as far as you knew, playing a role behind the scenes to try to arm twist lawmakers? And really, one has to really wonder why the Obama administration feels that these intelligence communities and intelligence agencies need such broad powers, such a large net to deal with the issue of terrorism.
Yeah, and I actually think you asked before, I think the impetus for bills like Richard Burr's, the intelligence community fantasy, somebody's gotten to him and said, no, we want a bigger slice of the pie. And to Obama's credit, he's saying, no, we need a more moderate slice of the pie. I've told people that we're going to rein in this dragnet to something more reasonable. So Obama is there. The entire point of this hysterical fear-mongering is to try and raise the stakes on people like Mitch McConnell, who, again, if the dragnet lapses, he is first and foremost responsible, not Rand Paul, as people say. But to some degree, Obama, I think, could have pushed further already in trying to shut down the dragnet using other authorities. The Obama administration keeps saying, and has for years, that they can't move the records back to the telecoms unless they pass a law. And that probably means expanded immunity and compensation for the providers, And that ought to raise some questions by itself. Again, what are the providers actually being asked to do? But Obama has taken a middle ground. You know, he's not shut down the dragnet when he could have or probably should have been able to. But at the same time, he's not pushing for the Richard Burr kind of intelligence community fantasy bill.
And finally, Marcy, we talked about what people can do and how people really have also been so active for so long. And recently there was an online effort called Blackout Congress, which was an interesting effort by activists that blocked access of members of Congress to their own websites and instead redirected them to a website, blackoutcongress.org, saying, we're blocking your access until you end mass surveillance laws. I'm wondering what impact you think such efforts have. I mean, they're certainly creative.
Well, you know, it's interesting because in the last 6 months or so since USA Freedom the last time died, I think there's a little more confidence from the privacy community that they can change the narrative on this, even with ISIS. You know, the idea is, oh my gosh, ISIS is going to go attack us in our streets. But I think that the coalition, which is really a transpartisan coalition, I mean, it unites libertarians and progressives, has gotten a bit stronger, and therefore it gotten a little more aggressive on insisting on real reform. And also, the Second Circuit ruled that the phone dragnet was not authorized by the law they're using. And I think that has also made people more confident. So so the narrative is beginning to change. I think there are at least two people. One, Ron Johnson, who is going to be challenged by Russ Feingold in Wisconsin, and also Chris Van Hollen, who is facing a primary to be Senator of Maryland against Donna Edwards. And in both of those races, I think you're already seeing people making decisions with an eye towards 2016 on pro-privacy as opposed to pro-surveillance. So we're beginning to see a change.
Marcy Wheeler, I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much.
And we'll certainly see what happens to this story in the next few days or so. My guest, Marcy Wheeler, is a journalist specializing in national security issues, the war on terror, and civil liberties. And you can read her column at exposefacts.org. It's a column entitled Right to Know. This is Uprising. We'll be right back.